I'm Andrew Coates. I'm the host of the Lift Free and Diet Hard podcast. Welcome to episode 306. And yes, I apologize. I've had a little bit of a delay between episodes. Despite my best intentions and years of being fairly consistent, sometimes gaps happen. I've been overwhelmingly busy in my online and in-person coaching. It's been great. I've come away from three different events in the last 3 months. And I have a little housekeeping before I introduce my guest, who's incredible. So I recently returned from Coaching Con. I was in Orlando just this past week. And my Instagram account was attacked and suspended. It wasn't hacked. It was mass reported. It's a long story. A whole bunch of other accounts associated who were all at this event were all the targets of the same extortion scam. No, I didn't pay that person to do anything. But unfortunately, I did have to pay a professional service to have my account fixed and restored. And it's an unfortunate reality that this stuff can happen. Thankfully, there are solutions. So if any of you guys had noticed that my account was down, and right now, even as we speak, you have to type in my full Andrew Coates Fitness handle in order to find me on Instagram, because there's still some residual. It's almost like it's a shadow ban, but it's not actually. So anyway, if you're wondering, shoot me a message. I will happily tell you more. I'm grateful you guys are here. And one of the things that I'm doing, and I'm encouraging every coach listening, get an email list, build your email list, get on it, because your social media can be taken away through no fault of your own. If you're not on my email list, I want you to message me. I'll set you up personally, or go to my website, www.andrewcoatesfitness.com. Sorry for that housekeeping. Let's get on to the more important stuff. My friend, Jamie Filer. I met Jamie at Real Coaches Summit in Vegas, my friend Aram's event, and Jamie was one of the speakers. And Jamie is the founder of Filer Fitness, and has a degree in kinesiology and a lot of education in exercise physiology. You've been an online coach since before it was common and popular too. So it's really great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. I appreciate it. And what an amazing plug for your email newsletter list, huh? Nice.
Well, given how much I spent remedying this problem, I need to get my money's worth.
Yeah.
But it's not just, hey, like, for sure, I want everybody on my email list. I don't want to lose contact with you, but I want you guys to also do this thing, because email marketing, it's not always about marketing, but you know, an email list is probably the most valuable and powerful thing any coach will have. And if you feel like, well, I don't have anything, guess what? Your clients. And then if you start writing articles, or you know, have a podcast or appearing on podcasts or anything you're doing, this is stuff that people are interested in. And I promise you, yes, there will be people who don't care, we'll unsubscribe. But there was a lot of people. When my account was down, I got a lot of messages, a lot of emails, a lot of private messages on Facebook, et cetera, of people who were like wondering what happened. Some people thought I blocked them. That's how horrifying this stuff is. People actually thought I blocked them.
Yeah.
So like, social media, very powerful vehicle, and I'm very bullish on it. But lots of people I know have lost their accounts for, saying the wrong thing, getting flagged by the platform, TikTok. God, I mean, you know, the US might ban TikTok outright. We still don't know what's going on. And they've been rattling sabers about that for years. Yeah. So you guys got to get on that stuff.
100%. And it's also, it's just such an amazing tool, because some people, right, they don't even like social media. Like, it's not about you not being on social media. Other people think TikTok is a waste of time. It's Instagram is a energy drain. Great reason to have an email list. Some people still read their emails.
What have you found has been your most powerful vehicle for, success in your business, but also supporting and serving people?
I would say Instagram, because it's free. That's why. And not everyone can afford coaching, and that's okay. But Instagram has always been for me the vehicle by which I help people who can or cannot afford it. And if I can go into like just a side quest, the reason I started my Instagram was in order to play a role. Like, I wanted to be a really big deal, but I worked as an in-person trainer doing 8 to 10 sessions a day, which brings us to what? Let's say 40 to 60 hours a week, right? And I loved it, but I could only impact a certain number of people as an in-person trainer. So I got a job working for Canada's biggest bodybuilding magazine, and I was their editor in chief, and we had a distribution of 50,000 every month. So now we're going from 8 to 10 people a day to 50,000 a month. Incredible jump. In the process, my Instagram was growing, and I eventually got to 75,000 followers, which I felt was really impressive. But now my eyeballs had usurped the eyeballs of the magazine. And I said, okay, this is where I'm going to make my impact. So I will always be loyal to Instagram because I can deliver so much value at no cost to anybody.
I feel the same way. It's the largest scale vehicle. Social media is always going to have more touch points because you're never going to have a one-to-one ratio of people listening to your podcast or on your email list compared to your Instagram. Now, there are people that I know who have actually, through legacy of all the things they do, have larger email lists than their Instagrams are. Sure. They just haven't taken those.
Yeah. Yep.
But I believe Instagram is a powerful vehicle. And I always kind of find it funny that people have these negative and resentful attitudes towards social media. And what usually is the case is it's someone who, it's sort of a sour grapes narrative. It's like, well, that's quote, influencers. They start complaining about influencers. It's like, no, you have to put some time and effort into it. You have to nurture the relationships with the people who are there. And I found it profoundly valuable. And of course, yes, you're vulnerable to it going away if something happens like what I just described. But, you know, that's not a reason not to do it either.
Oh my gosh, 100%. And I think the problem is that capital I influencer has given people with influence a bad name. And that's where there's an issue, because I consider myself a person with influence, especially in the LGBTQ community. But as soon as someone thinks that I'm just there to sell, or as soon as they think that everything I do is branded content in collaboration with at whatever company, I've lost their trust. So yes, it's a sour grape situation and it's a bad apple situation. The fruits are rotten.
And you know, I still think it's such a potent vehicle for good. And I can't get behind this constant state of negativity about social media. It's also the reality of the world we live in now. It is how people consume things. It's how most people, at least on a surface level, consume media. And I do believe that Instagram is still the media hub for fitness professionals. I think there are people who've done great on TikTok. I think that one-to-one, the relationship between, you know, and per follower is much, much higher when it comes to Instagram than any other platform. Right? Yeah. And I do. So I still think people should take advantage of it.
Absolutely. I would also, unpopular opinion, though Instagram is a highlight reel, what's the problem? Why wouldn't you see only the good things in my life, let's say, for example, and say, man, how awesome is it that I could come up from being an in-person trainer, making $1,500, $3,000 a month, and eventually get to here, speaking at summits, doing this and that on Andrew Coates' podcast, or hey, you get to see the best parts of my marriage. Isn't that something to level up to, rather than like, yeah, they probably fight in private though, or whatever. She's just like, why not just see the highlight reel and say, man, how do I get that? You know what I mean? Like, why can't people just see the highlight reel and not, instead of being jealous or poo-pooing it, say, yeah, how'd she get there though?
I mean, think about this too. Like, you're out in public, you interact with couples, like the relationship dynamic. I mean, there are exceptions where you see the awful in front of you and it's really awkward, but you know, it's like most of the time we're seeing the highlight reel of those people, whether it's like the photos that have been taken for like the last, what, 40 plus years or whatever, the Polaroids, or, you know, you go out to dinner with people, you see them in public. And yes, you do occasionally see people fighting. You're still seeing highlight reel in a sense. You're not always seeing what's going on behind the scenes. There's actually an account that I love. They're not in the fitness industry. And I think it goes by We Are Not Concerned. And it's a guy from a good old boy from West Virginia and his wife. Her name is Sako. And she's from South Africa. And they're funny. They're absolutely fucking funny. But they actually like have a great sense of humor. They sometimes like show, like they take barbs at each other. And she seems like she gets pretty twisted up about it. He likes pushing her buttons. But they're really adorable people. So I love this account. It has nothing to do with fitness. But I don't think they're a good example of, you don't always get the highlight reel, but you get a lot of humor.
Yeah. The other reason I think that the influencers kind of muddy the water or saturate the market is because the same way we used to get so upset with and I hate to like knock them again, because Katie is one, the bikini competitor who diets for a show and then becomes a coach. Like, as soon as you hit what, 25K followers, you think you have the authority to tell everyone what they should be doing regarding their health and their wellness and their hormones and their, right? So I think the same way the coach market had been saturated by athletes thinking they could do it, the coach market is now saturated by influencers thinking they can do it.
There's something that I think people should recognize within this. So in any of our local environments before social media really amplified this stuff, there was always the proverbial person, hey, I placed fourth in a local, you know, bodybuilding, you know, bikini show, DM me for coaching, right? Well,
right, yeah.
Hey, that only lasts so long. If you're not very good at it, guess what? You know, the few clients you're going to get are not going to stick around. That industry in particular is notoriously fickle. So, you know, even with social media at scale, you would have to get in front of a tremendous amount of people and always have a new supply of people who are going to work with you. If you're not doing a very good job, sorry, my cat is literally in front of the camera here. Ozzy, be good. And you're going to exhaust that supply. And this is what happens with grifters and charlatans, where your shtick gets old pretty fast. And then guess what? There's no more people to fool. Now, yes, there's always new grifters and charlatans, but guess what happens? You also have a lot of really good integrity-based people, our friends and colleagues in this industry, who are doing a really wonderful job of being of service, and they're being successful. So I still don't think it's worth worrying too much about it's not to say ignore the bad guys. They can cause harm. Sure, you get these large accounts walking through supermarkets going, fuck this shit, this is shit, don't eat this shit, right? You know what I'm talking about. There's lots of that now. And of course, there's all these useless Muppets. And by the way, follow Dr. Ides, IDS, because he calls people Muppets. I've been calling people Muppets for a very long time, so I didn't steal that from him. But like, you get these useless Muppets who are now thinking, oh, I can build status rapidly by walking through a grocery store. Some useless human being. I saw this thing, and I normally leave them alone, but I was at this guy. And I think Dr. Ides actually went after him. And he was like comparing Reese chocolate something and like cheese. And he was telling people that they should eat cheese instead of Reese. I mean, first of all, fuck off. Leave Reese alone. Like Reese's peanut butter cups, etc. That stuff's golden. Don't mess with that shit. Two, like, that's not exactly a good comparison, because cheese, high calorie stuff, can get really out of hand. So it was like he's copying these other higher profile influencers, but it's actually a really stupid comparison.
Yeah.
But, so there's an endless supply of this stuff, and it's a fast track. But I don't actually think it really leads too far. And I do not think it's fundamentally changing our ability to get in front of good people who are learning from this stuff. They're being fooled and they're realizing, wait a second, this shit's rubbish. Who's out there who's actually got integrity? Who knows their stuff?
So the only reason it does bother me is because often we are like Filer Fitness, it are people's third or fourth coach. That is a lot of frogs to kiss before you find your princess. You don't want to date again, Andrew.
I agree.
Like, they've already spent the money. They've already spent the time. So it's annoying that they found the charlatans and the grifters first, even if it only lasted for the stupid 12-week program in which they got no support, or only if it only lasted the $150 a month versus the $499 a month. It still screwed it up a little bit for the rest of us.
Absolutely. But you know what? You're not complaining and just sitting there and feeling entitled to anything. You're out there and you built the platform. You built the influence. You built the reach. And quite frankly, I know lots of these types of coaches who piss and whine and moan about quote influencers. And they are, but the problem is they're resentful of successful people in the industry with integrity who built larger social media followings because they feel entitled to it. It's like, hey, I've been a coach for, you know, 20 years and people should pay attention to me because fuck all these influencers. Like, okay, cool. But you haven't done anything to actually go out and like get eyeballs on you or your media to help people. And if you could legislate, people call for more regulation in the industry. Guess what? Most of the people that we're complaining about, the regulation wouldn't change a thing. They're in different countries. You would need simultaneous, like legal and identical legal repercussions for every person, whether they're in Croatia, Northern Ireland, Brazil, the US, Canada, you know, the Philippines, unilaterally to make these people go away and then get people to agree on exactly what is good information versus bad information. And even like respected PhDs do not always agree on, you know, nutrition and fitness stuff. And yeah. So guess what? They're not going away. And so sitting there and calling for regulation and thinking, oh, I'm doing something good, and we just make these people go away. Guess what? They're not going away. They're not certified. They're not going to be governed by the rules and regulations of whatever governing body we have. So guess what? If you're not doing something about it to get in front of people to build an audience and do something better, I don't care about your opinion. It's the classic man in the arena, you know, sentiment. Now, I want to draw something out, because when I met you, you made a really big impression on me. And it was something that I find is actually kind of rare to this level, is few people have shown such a genuine, selfless interest in other people. You made me feel incredibly important. Now, again, I was very interested in what you were doing. So I want to know, is this like something innate that's always been you? Is this something that you recognize as important and you've like literally fostered the skill, some sort of in between?
I'm going to say it's some sort of in between. My mom is a psychologist by trade, social worker. She got her master's almost like a day away from getting her PhD. She just didn't do her thesis, but did all of the coursework and the teaching leading up to it. She was a guidance counselor. I grew up with questions, Andrew. My mom would grill my friends, and not in like an interrogative way, but getting to know them, right? If these people were going to come into our house, she wanted to know who they were, right? I'm an only child. So she would, right? She would hold court in the kitchen when everyone would come over and drink in 11th and 12th grade. Like half of our friends were in the living room hanging with me. The other friends were being entertained by my mom. And I don't mean like entertained, like, but she would just ask them questions about what was going on in their life. And I said, wow. So if you want to make people feel that way and spend time with you, you just have to ask them about them. That's all. And then you realize that people are really freaking interesting for the most part. And then as I got to university, I was a little bit self-conscious. I had an eating disorder. I didn't really want to talk about me at all or what I was doing. So it was just easier to deflect by talking about them. And then I got into essentially sales and my personal training business. And then it was, okay, so I guess you use this to also get people into your system so that you can help them. Cool. Great. So it definitely started off as innate because it was a learned behavior. And then it became a skill that I cultivated in order to help build and grow to have more impact.
Someone wrote a book about this over 100 years ago. You probably read it, right?
It's pretty famous. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Which is such an awful title for this, right?
But it's also the best title because you do it without thinking about it.
Yep. And it's really... fundamentally, it's a book about make it about other people. I've got a book I'm a huge fan of. I think you'd love it. And when I read it, this is my mantra. It is What's In It for Them by Joe Polish. This is
Yes. Joe. Yeah.
And he's quite legendary for this sort of stuff. Great book. It's really just a framework. I talk about this in presentations on media a lot. It's like a lot of people, it's a natural instinct to want to talk about yourself. Which is why this works in reverse. If you make it about other people, they like you. They live. That's the premise of How to Win Friends and Influence People. They will like you and want to work with you more if you just make it about them, ask them a lot of questions. But I also find that people can get trapped in a scarcity mindset. They get a bit transactional, and then they're thinking, all right, what's in this for me? And hence the title of his book, What's In It for Them? And Naval Ravikant, in The Almanac of Naval Ravikant, is a great book. He highlights how when he's doing deals, we're talking about like big money deals in Naval's case. If anybody's ever had experience where like, you know, someone was really tough negotiating, trying to squeeze every drop and every dollar out of, you know, a transaction. If you've ever been on the other end of that, does that make you want to do more deals with that person and transact with them anymore? Not necessarily. If anything, if you make sure the other person comes out ahead in any scenario, I'll give you an example. Recently, I did my most recent intake of, I've got an online women's strength program, 13 week, I do 4 cohorts a year. And I've had a partner in it for the previous 2 years, and Bailey Lau, she's wonderful. Everybody should go follow her on her media. But Bailey along the way has done so well. She's come down to events. She was actually at Real Coaches Summit. I don't know if you got a chance to meet her there. She's sort of quiet. But anyway, she's decided that she really wanted to build something of her own, do it a little bit differently, and have total ownership over it. She's earned that right. So she decided she didn't want to continue with our group cohort. So I was left with the choice of taking it over or shutting it down. I chose to take it over. But I turned around and I offered her a chunk of money. She didn't ask for it. I offered her to say, hey, you know, you put a lot of work into this thing. You know, I'm going to offer this. She was happy with it. I felt it was reasonably generous. And, you know, I just want to do right by people in that situation. I didn't have to do that, or I could have like said to her, all right, you know, are you happy with this piddly little amount? No, it's like, here, I'm just going to give you this and I'll pay you a little extra to just make sure you watch the back end so I don't screw anything up, which worked out great. I was able to figure it out. And I'm now excited about the program because I have complete, like I'm immersed in every aspect of it. She's great with the back end. So I had to learn a lot of stuff. She taught me with no complaint or whatever, like she was happy to. And now I'm excited about this thing going forward. I'm excited how I can scale it, but I'm excited that she's thriving and doing what she wants. So everybody wins in that situation instead of being, you know, hey, I want to squeeze the most out of this situation as I possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the other way I see it is similar to dating, right? On one hand, you essentially have to sell yourself to the other person, but protect your energy. The more you know about someone else, the more you can determine if they're someone you want in your ecosystem. It's about time and energy. Those are things I cannot get back. So as soon as I started asking you questions and I got to learn more about you, I said, okay, cool. The same way I would put my money into an investment because I want more of it. I would put my time and energy into learning more about you because you're someone I just want in my ecosystem. Your energy is just, it's palpable, it's contagious, it's fun. I can learn something. And it's just, to me, it's an interaction. It's not a transaction. But I see it as like, here's someone you've never met before. There's a pretty good chance they're more interesting than you are. Why don't you shut your mouth? But I think everyone should go into interactions like that. You have no idea who is sitting on the other side of the table, and chances are they're more interesting than you are.
There are some great people in the industry who are so damn humble that they just make it about you. Too many people to list, but I think of my friend Nick Shaw, and he's one of the co-founders of Renaissance Periodization. Like, yeah, Mike Isabel is mega, mega well known, and Nick's his partner in all this, and just as instrumental to its success. Mike's certainly the more of the face of it, but Nick is such a nice guy. He was texting me earlier about something and it just makes me go. So I've grabbed onto Nick and I'm like, all right, let's get you some speaking stuff. So I've arranged some contacts to get him a couple of speaking things. Cause a while ago, he made note that he was interested in stepping into that space, but he's such a giving, interesting, supportive person. I'm like, you're very easy to do this for. Right. I lost my train of thought, but you know, I want to hear more from you on this because what you were doing there is you turned around and you started making shit about me again, right? And I do have guests on this podcast that sometimes will do this. They'll literally flip it back around to me. My friend Tasha Whalen, who you would love, Tasha's badass. She was a guest a while ago. Tasha does this shit where she like flips it and she starts asking the host questions. I'm like, no, Tasha, this is about you.
It's my podcast now, Andrew. Yeah, but no, I've been known to do that. But like, so my wife calls me on it all the time. But she knows I'm actually doing that as a defense mechanism because chances are I didn't do something right. So I should probably be thinking about her.
Well, you did hit on something too. Like is there an aspect of playing small within this? Because you alluded to that in the past.
Yeah. For me, I would say it is. It is because, I mean, if you hear my story, but then I hear yours, right? Like, you know, they say that if everyone threw their problems in a pot, as bad as you think they are, you'd still go back for yours. It's the same thing. Like, I don't think that what I've been through is a big deal anymore, especially compared to what other people have been through. So I take my toys and I keep them to myself. And I say, well, you know, what are you playing with? What's going on in your life? Because again, my story, my origin story, the highs and lows of my life, now it's a script. It's something that I can tell Instagram. It's something that I can, you know, rehash on a podcast without crying. So I guess I'm just so sick of it. Not in a, that's the wrong word. I just get it. It's just, it is who I am. And now I'm 36 and we're far past that. That I don't need to rehash it. I don't need to go over it again. I'd rather learn someone new.
Well, fundamentally, and what you're ultimately saying is that, and I think this is the good thing, is you find other people more interesting. And I think most people get stuck in this mode where they think that they themselves are more interesting, and you lose the opportunity to explore and learn about what's interesting about other people. And so I think it's genuinely coming from a good place, even if it's influenced by, some of this stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And I would say that I do play small. I am still, to an extent, self-conscious. I've just learned to work. I'm still an introvert. I'm just an extroverted introvert. But there is a big part of me that, like my mom, still just wants to get to know other people despite whatever else is going on in here.
Okay. Now, you have showed me, though, the example. I remember you were talking about how when Aram was putting together this event, you fearlessly let him know that you deserve this opportunity, right?
That so I did.
You are willing to advocate for yourself when it matters. So let's go. Let's have some fun with this one. I didn't plan this, but I like this. Having a podcast, hosting an event, sometimes I get a lot of people who will reach out and ask about, getting to appear. But especially when it comes to like the event, any event organizer has a limited amount of spots, limited budget, what have you, and then they need to make this event really work. So I have experienced a lot of people who the only person that would really benefit from them being in the event is them, because they're seeking status, right? So that's a little bit different, but you've earned it. You've worked hard to put yourself in that position. So any thoughts to the art of asking for opportunities, but making sure that you've put yourself in a position where someone's going to look at you and go, yes, you deserve this.
So this goes back to the age-old problem of I can't get a job because I have no experience, but I won't have experience until someone gives me a job, right? So how do I get status speaking at an event until I've earned status by speaking at events, right? So this is where I think, number one, don't be a one-trick pony. You can't only have 150,000 followers on Instagram, but you've never met them in person. You've never hosted a retreat. You've never gone to another convention or a summit. You've never put yourself out there. You don't have an email list, right? Or you only ever put yourself in a box of being good at sales versus coaching versus EQ versus IQ, right? So I think you have to have, so I pitched Aram the idea of sales. He said, no, I want you talking about mindset. I said, done. He could do that with me, right? Because he knew that I'm not a one-trick pony. And if he wanted me to give a completely different presentation, or he wanted me to give it virtually versus in person, I'd be up for the job, because there's nothing I can't. I'm like a ninja, Andrew. I'm like a Swiss Army knife. So I think that's where the confidence comes from, is after 18 years in the industry and 36 years on the earth, I don't think there's anything I can't do. I just need to learn a little bit more about it.
And you have this rare combination of confidence and self-assuredness that isn't arrogance or brashness, but yet still the desire and willingness to make it about the other person. And I don't find that's common.
Definitely not in our industry, because the other reason, and almost to bring this conversation full circle, not to say it should end because it shouldn't, but there's no entitlement. Like, just because I have as many followers as I do, or have made as much as I have, or have been in the industry as long as I have, entitles me to nothing, because my Instagram could be shut down tomorrow. The IRS could seize my shit in a week. It's not going to matter, right? Like, God forbid. But again, I've earned everything and nothing at the same time.
And I think that's a wise attitude, because as you said, you're not entitled to anything, right?
Right.
And in a way, social media is kind of a funny animal, and I want to next pick your brain, because you gave me some stuff to work with and I cherry picked a few, and it's social media and mental health. So there's something there, but you mentioned how like social media can go away. And I think I've observed a lot of people who look at social media and following count as a status symbol of its own. Now, it's human nature. We know that humans are, I've said this lots of times, we're pattern recognition machines. And one of the fundamental patterns that we recognize is social status, right? You know, it meant that you didn't get kicked out of the tribe in ancient times, which would have probably meant death. And right. And as much as like people may not like this, is like it had a lot to do with like getting the most quote desirable mates. And that's still very much like a thing to this day. I also think that like our perception of status, like our innate desire to seek high calorie food in a environment of scarcity, we now live in a world of overabundance, has become quite maladaptive. Like there's some really funky shit that goes on with social media.
Yep.
So I think that we have to be very careful about not getting consumed up with the idea of status, because if that account goes away, poof, there goes your status, unless you've also built other, what I like to call flags, we'll say points of authority. I'm wearing a Linkin Park shirt right now. So these points of authority within your career kind of flows with it. If you get the reference, you get it. If not, sorry guys, I can't help you. Things like having been published, writing stuff, if someone's written a book, you know, high level education, genuine business success, tenure within the industry, you know, public speaking, you name it, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And if all someone has, and I'm paraphrasing something you said earlier, it's like if all someone has is social media following, and then you have none of the other things, guess what? I think the other things are actually far more important. And, you know, I believe both of our social media followings are actually the byproduct of A, being savvy about social media, but primarily because there's a lot of credibility and a lot of time in the industry that is the foundation upon which we were able to get more people to say, I'm going to hit that little follow button because I'm making a vote in support of this person because I like their content and I like who they are. And that's fundamentally what you have to tap into if your goal is to build following.
100%. And call me old school, but I am still more proud of the fact that I run like 6 pages deep on Google than have 118,000 followers on Instagram, right? Because Google's still the number one search engine, right? So whenever someone searches my name, they can find me not only on Instagram, but like you said, every article I've ever written for bodybuilding.com, Muscle Insider, they can find my YouTube channel, they can find the podcast, they can find all of the podcasts I've ever been on talking about all of the different things I talk about. Whereby, honestly, with Instagram, you're going to get a very small snapshot of entertainment, education, and inspiration, mostly geared towards the LGBTQ community. So it's not even relevant to like the world. It's, again, it's a vehicle for me to sell the program to impact more people.
Mm. And you've crushed within that niche, which is huge. I'm still impressed, by the way, bodybuilding.com.
Thank you.
I've told this story in pockets, but I've technically written for bodybuilding.com. Now, the site, I have some inside info. Something's wrong with the site right now. So a lot of the old articles are gone, but I was commissioned to write an article for bodybuilding. I was paid for it. The editor at the time, who's incredible, we still chat, but the company was sold right before he was able to publish my article officially. So I have always had a contributor page. It's there. It's actually down now because whatever is broken with the site, but I've never put it on my media, like on my website, that, hey, I've written for bodybuilding.com, because the article was never officially published. And my editor there was great because he like checked in with me, made sure I got paid. You know what's funny? I actually would trade what I got paid for it to actually be able to wave it around and say, hey, I've written for this. So it's like, oh, missed out on this one. So, but it's impressive. It's one of the major things, along with T Nation, for a long time. It's where Lane Norton came out of, right? Lane got a lot of his early stuff with bodybuilding. So it's a powerful platform.
It's funny because if we talk about my brass balls and knowing my worth, I approached the editor-in-chief of bodybuilding.com when I was 19. And I said, hey, I'm Jamie Filer. I'm really, I'm an avid forum member. I love what you guys are doing, but I've noted, I'm also a female bodybuilder competitor. I've noticed that there's a gentleman named Lane Norton who covers men's bodybuilding from his laptop on a feed This was before the days of live stream, but then the laptop almost shuts down completely and Lane Norton pieces out for figure and fitness and women's bodybuilding. Do you have anyone covering those events? And they said, no. And I said, I got you. So for 3 years, when I was 19, 20, and 21, I would sit next to Lane. And as soon as he was done covering the men, he would give me the bodybuilding.com laptop. And I would essentially tell everyone else watching the forums what the women on stage look like to the best of my ability.
So there's something monstrous within which you just said there. So what did you do? I want you to explain what you did to create that opportunity.
I mustered up the courage and the bravery to send an email to the editor-in-chief, my resourcefulness to find the email for the editor-in-chief, and said, there is a gap in your market. I am aware of it because I identify with it and I think I can fill it.
Okay. The last part, the first part, lots of people do shit like that, but they don't pair it with the last part, which is you knew the audience, you knew what was valuable, potentially valuable to the editor. You didn't go, hey, I have a really great story. How do I get featured on bodybuilding.com? You went, yeah. Hey, there is, I know how to be of service to you and your audience. That is what you did. And yeah. That is what's missing for a lot of people. A lot of people go, hey, metaphorically or literally, I have a really great story. I get emails all the time. Hey, people I don't know. Hey, can I come on your podcast? Or I represent so-and-so. Like, that's a good way to piss me off is nice. Like, don't even like contact me yourself, but actually send some messenger to go, hey, so-and-so would love to come on your podcast. You know, they have a really great story. It's like, No, I don't, you know, get them to talk to me themselves, maybe, right? But instead, you told him how you could actually be a valuable to him. I'm assuming the editor was a he back then. I'm not sure.
It was, but again, like it wasn't, it was about me, but it wasn't. It was about the women who wanted to know how the women were doing, right? So it wasn't even self-serving. And I, like, although they paid my way to the Arnold, the Olympia, and the Europas, I got $35 in bodybuilding.com credit per article. Like, and I wasn't thinking about my reputation. I was in university. I had bigger fish to fry than like my vocabulary regarding full versus stringy. Right. So again, it had nothing to do with, and no one was impressed either, because this was Toronto and York University. This was not a big deal. So it was never about me. It was just about, man, I'm kind of like, doesn't anyone else want to know? Because if I want to know, there's got to be someone else out there. So that I think has been the governing principle, is that it's not about you.
Which is the overarching theme of this entire episode, which I think is fundamentally important. Now, I think a lot of people are told this stuff all the time, but I think the nuance matters. Not much time left, but I do still want to touch on your thoughts on, you know, mental health and Instagram, because you said yourself, you're very positive about Instagram. So am I. Right. Where can people get themselves in trouble?
I think where people can get themselves in trouble is the FOMO, is fear of missing out. And here's why. When you are living your life, but you see someone's story, then not only, or it's a twofold problem. Not only are you jealous that they're doing something that you're not, but you're also missing the beauty of what you could be doing, if that makes sense. So you're neither present nor future, or like in two places at once. And what's happening right now is so beautiful, but you've ruined that for yourself. And there's no possible way you could be where your friend is right now. You didn't get the invite. It's just not happening for you. So you've stabbed yourself from the front and the back. Like, bam, my friend didn't invite me. I feel crappy, but also so much beauty around me now that I am choosing not to appreciate.
I've practiced, I'm not like a really hardcore disciplined at this thing, but I try to practice just being mindful in the little things I'm doing. And sometimes like washing, like hand washing some of my dishes is sort of a place where I just, I'll pause, slow time down a little bit and just be like, okay, cool. You know, this is not this torturous chore. This is like a moment of like literally like Zen almost that I can kind of drop into. And I'm much, much, much better at, here's another aspect of this. When something happens beyond my control, and there's a bunch of that this week, you know, it's taking that breath, slowing down and going, all right, I can't control this. It's probably going to be okay. It's not really all that pleasant in the very moment that whatever's happening, but you know, over a long enough time horizon, it's probably going to turn into a pretty decent story. Yeah. And it's not going to be as bad, but in the now, it's like, don't freak out, be at peace. This whole thing at the conference, a whole bunch of people whose accounts were down, a whole bunch of people really frustrated for me. And I'm like, hey, it's beyond my control right now. You know, it'll get remedied. I'll be able to figure this out. I might have to throw some money at it, which turned out to be true. But yeah. Money, people who like don't like money, they have a weird thing. It's like money can allow you to solve a lot of problems, including do a lot of good in the world. So I'm a big believer in build brand, build media, build your footprint, build your business, help more people, get paid really well to do it. And then if you really have a problem with, you know, money, fundamentally, emotionally, guess what? You'll either piss it away or you can turn around and do something really fucking good with it.
Yeah. I think you also touched on something really important. You're, again, bringing things full circle. Your lack of Instagram made you appreciate the email list that much more. It also gave you a lesson to give to other people. When something like that happens and when you choose to be present, either because it was forced or you've just chosen maybe a social media detox, you've chosen not to look at stories, or you've muted the stories of people for whom you get FOMO, right? There's a lesson there. My phone was stolen when I went to Ultra, the music festival in Miami. And from like 11 PM until the following day around 12, I didn't have a phone and it just connected me so much more. I was able to have breakfast with a friend and we were the first two to wake up. I was fully present when I did a couple of my check-ins on Sunday morning, instead of seeing the notifications pop up and looking, you know, just a little bit to the right of my phone when I should have been looking at the Loom. There's just so much you can get from being present. And sometimes you have to have something taken away from you to really see that.
Well, I felt that all weekend long at the event. I was like, okay, cool. I don't have to worry about, like, I am grateful for every comment, every message. And I will tell people, like, reach out to me. That is a price I'm willing to pay to positively affect people. Absolutely. However, I also took those 5 days. I'm like, okay, cool. I got a little bit of a break. And my Instagram account came up early Monday. And you want to know what I did? I hid away. I didn't post that day. I didn't put anything up on my story. I kind of like, all right, I'm going to take one more day.
Right.
I was also very busy. I got a lot of clients that day. And I'm going to have one more day where I don't have a whole bunch of shit to respond to. Because today, shit's gone haywire. But it's time to go full set on getting people on the email list. So
how
do I drive people to follow you, connect with your media?
Yeah, sure. Instagram is the best way. I am JAIM and the number 91, Jame91 on Instagram, or you can find me on Facebook at Jamie Filer.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, thank you again. I appreciate you guys being here. I appreciate you taking the time to check out what Jamie is doing. And I am going to do my best to get you guys weekly episodes. I don't have any travel coming up for a while. Yes, work projects are kind of bonkers. And but I want to bring you amazing guests that are worthwhile and not just fill in the gaps. And we'll see what I can do with the podcast as a whole. So one call to action. Okay. If you enjoyed this, number one, actually, I'm going to give you two. One is follow Jamie. But two, if you felt that this conversation would be valuable to a coach or an enthusiast friend of yours in your world, send it to them. Take the link, send it to them and say, hey, I thought of you. I think you'd enjoy this conversation. It helps me get this podcast in front of more people. It helps Jamie, you know, get more people in front of her. And I appreciate you guys all for tuning in. And if everything goes according to plan, I should have a great episode for you guys next week. Jamie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate you.